Hello, Herbies, and welcome back to another episode of the Plantology Podcast. As always, I am your host, Natalie.
And I'm your co-host, Hannah.
And today we are talking about, we're talking about a flower today, but the flower I chose was really inspired by the fact that it has been growing in my garden and blooming lately, and it's just, I think, my favorite flower of all time.
It's very vibrant. I even saw someone online describing it as gaudy because it's so vibrant. And I'm like, I love it. It's like a huge pop of color.
It's amazing. And there's so many different colors, so many different varieties. So anyways, today we are talking about the dahlia flower, which is just such a stunning flower. And I definitely learned some stuff about dahlia from this research this week, because like I said, this is my first year growing dahlias, but they are like my favorite cut flower for sure.
Welcome to the Plantology Podcast, where we talk about the long-standing presence of herbs throughout human history. I believe there is knowledge embedded within these stories that may connect more with the spirit of the herbs.
So anyways, their Latin name is, it's dahlia, species plural, because there are about 42 different species of dahlia and several subspecies. I think, from what I was understanding, I think they're kind of like mint. They can hybridize very easily with each other. I don't know if you knew that, like, mint could do that.
What does that even mean? Or to explain that to, like, a layperson.
Like, they cross species with each other, like, and then you get like a hybridization of the two species.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so, you know, just kind of cool. But I did not know this, but they are actually native to Mexico
and, like,
Central America. Yeah. I had no idea that that's where they were native to. And they were utilized often by the Aztecs, who harvested them for food, because dahlias have tuber roots.
They're like potatoes, right?
Yeah, tuber. That's what I was just about to say. Tuber roots are like potatoes. And so, yeah, dahlias, they have tuber roots. And so they would harvest this and they would eat the tubers as food, which this, after the Spanish conquistadors and everything happened of, you know, Spain coming over and conquering them, this tradition of eating the dahlia tubers kind of died out of their diet. So, but they are edible. You can eat them.
Yeah, it's actually the national flower of Mexico.
Yeah, yeah. It was named the national flower of Mexico in 1963.
Mm-hmm. So kind of recently.
Yeah, kind of recently. But I love that they're naming it the dahlia, you know, because the Aztec, you know, worked with dahlia. They also, so there's a dahlia tree, or a dahlia known as tree dahlia.
Oh, this is cool. I found some stuff on this.
Okay, yeah. So the Latin name is Dahlia imperialis, or tree dahlia, like I said. And it grows like, it can be like 20 to 30 feet tall.
It's huge. And
it's
huge.
Massive. Mm-hmm. It's massive. Yeah. And the stems of this tree are actually hollow.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Aztec would use the hollow stems as like pipes basically for water. Which is so smart. So genius.
Yeah. I saw some pictures online of, like, I think they were block carvings, and it was of people, you know, making this device and carrying water on their backs over like miles and miles from the stems of these tree dahlias. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I thought it was really cool. And the Aztec name for the tree dahlia is, I'm probably going to butcher this, Acocotili, meaning water cane.
Acocotil. The X is chi.
No, there's Acocotil.
No, I found an X.
Oh, you found an X?
Yeah.
I found A-C-O-C-O-T-L-I.
No, I found Acocotil. I can't even say it, but yeah, that's the Nahuatl name. So.
Yeah, and it means water cane. So.
Yeah, I found Ati means water, Cocochli means tube, And chotil means flower. So altogether, flower of hollow stems with water, which is pretty accurate for the device that they created.
Pretty accurate. I also found a darker connection to the Aztecs with Dahlia.
I found a lot of connections to the Aztecs, you go first.
Okay. I found that petals of Dahlia were incorporated into human sacrifices.
I didn't find that.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that one I was like, oh my, okay.
I found that.
And I didn't find this information, but just saying, you know, going through it right now, I wonder if there was a specific color of Dahlia that was used in their sacrifices made to their sun god, their human sacrifices made to their sun god. Because I found a lot of, like, symbolism of the different colors of dahlias, which I don't think necessarily came from the Aztec people. I think that came a little bit more from, like, the Victorian era.
Yeah, just like with roses, the dahlias, they have their own, like, language with the symbolism
but
of colors.
But the black dahlia, I won't go through all the colors right now. I'll go through them later, but just because we're talking about, like, human sacrifice, right? So I want to say what the black dahlia, so I found that it is... it represents sadness and betrayal, which the black dahlias, they're not actually black. They're just really, really dark maroon.
Yeah, they're like kind of purple. Yeah.
Yeah. But there was actually a murder victim in 1947 that was dubbed the Black Dahlia. And her name was actually Elizabeth Short. But yeah, they associated her with Black Dahlia because I guess she wore, like, black clothing everywhere. But I guess this, like, further imprinted people's representation of Black Dahlias of sadness and betrayal.
The victim was called the Black Dahlia, or the killer?
Yeah, no, the victim was, because she, like, I guess wore black clothing all the time. But yeah, just, you know, just kind of going back to the Aztecs, it just makes me wonder if they had a specific color of dahlia that they were using the petals of.
I actually found that the dahlia was the war flower to the Aztecs.
I didn't find that interesting.
Yeah, which is why I'm kind of thinking that maybe the red dahlia was the symbol that they used. So whenever the Spanish came over to, you know, conquer the Aztecs, the Spanish government actually sent professional botanists with the conquistadors.
Yeah, they did. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Which I had no idea, but that's really smart. They're like, hey, what can we bring over from the New World? What plants you got going on here? So
back then, plants were, you know, they were their medicine. They were
their food, medicine, everything.
Yeah, so it was very important.
So the Aztecs, they shared a lot of information with the Spanish botanists about the dahlia, and regarding the symbolism as a war flower, there was a myth that the earth goddess Serpent Woman, earth goddess Serpent Woman, that's a lot, was ordered to, by the sky gods, to impale a flower of dahlia on a sharp point of a mage leaf, I don't know what that is, and to hold both to her heart all night long. And the next morning, she gave birth to a god, I can't say the name, Uzilpochti. And he was fully grown, fully armed, and with an immediate thirst for blood coming from the flower's 8 blood red rays. So every single petal was blood red, and it symbolized his thirst for blood. So that kind of symbolized, it's really intense, like the war association. But also the Aztecs believed, not only did they eat, like you said, they ate dahlia, especially the roots as a source of food, but they believed it to be a cure for epilepsy.
I found that as well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought that was cool.
I thought so too. Yeah, going back to what you said about the Spanish sending botanists over, Francisco Hernandez was one of those people who was sent to Mexico by the Spanish King Philip II in 1570 to study, like you said, like the plants, the natural resources, which were, you know, in the New World, because these were new to them. They, you know, wanted to see what they had over there.
Right.
Part of why they were going, I guess. And one of the plants that Hernandez wrote about, like Hannah said, is in his records, was dahlias. And this, I actually found a quote of what he had to say of dahlia, so I'll read it. It's a little long, but Francisco Hernandez says, this plant, which the Aztecs, he has a crazy name for them, which I cannot even say, call acotili, however Hannah said it, and it is soft tissued, its leaves similar to mountain nard, but cut, some being fine cut, bearing the ends of the stalks, which are 9-inch, slender and round, stellate flowers, pale to reddening, with double roots of the size of acorns, ending in ever so many fibers, on the outside black, within white. This seems to belong to the order of Liguistuncum. It is found in the mountains of Huacahuanesis. In taste, the root is smelly, bitter, sharp. It is hot and dry in the third degree. One once eaten relieves stomach ache, helps windiness of the stomach, provokes urine, brings out sweat, drives out chill, strengthens a weak stomach against chill, resists the chill, opens obstructions, and reduces tumors. So that is what he had to say of dahlia. Kind of long, like I said.
Well, speaking on the medicinal properties of the Aztecs, I also found, in addition to what you're saying, they used it as like a tonic. They would, as a diuretic, to treat coughs, like you said, the chill, against colic, mm-hmm. and to reduce fever. So they used it for a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's heating, so yeah.
Oh, you know what's really cool? I don't know if you found this, but another thing that the Aztecs shared with a Spanish botanist was they had a very advanced knowledge base of how to breed and hybridize dahlias already.
Yeah.
So they were already breeding dahlias, the crossing them, and they would do this based on color, fragrance, shape, and form. Like, they were breeding a ton of dahlias, and like you said, there's like a ton of different kinds.
There's so many, and they're so cool. Some of them look so different from each other, and I just love dahlias.
Yeah, so people have been breeding them forever. And I did read somewhere, I found a couple of food blogs, like natural food blogs, with people that actually eat dahlia today. And a bunch of them were saying that depending on the breed, the taste can be really bad or really good. So it really depends on the breed. Like, the ornamental breeds are not as good.
Yeah, I've read that as well. They say, like, the ones that are closer to just, like, the original version of dahlias are the tastier. And then the further away they get, they say they just, like, kind of lose flavor is what I read.
Yeah, and that makes sense. Like, with every single plant that we look at, the ones that are closer to the original plant, their medicinal properties are higher, and they taste better, and they're just better for you.
Yeah, I actually have some dahlias. I have three or four of them growing in my front yard right now. The two that are blooming right now are yellow and white, and I will have photos of those up on the website, which I will tell you guys more about later. But they're so beautiful, and I think I don't think I'm going to try and eat the tubers this year.
It's kind of bold.
I really would love to, but you can also save the tubers. So you, like, dig them up and you save them kind of like a bulb, and you can replant it the next year. So I kind of want to, like, and, you know, you plant one, you get multiple tubers off of it, so then you have, like, multiple plants next year, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of want to, like, get a decent amount of them going first, and then maybe next year try eating some tubers.
Yeah, I really want you to, like, make a meal out of tubers and let me know how they taste.
I think it would be really fun. Or, like, I mean, you honestly could, if you don't have enough, you could also, like, mix them in with potatoes, you know?
Yeah, like, kind of as half substitute. I have
it'd be cool to try.
I have a long but fun story.
Okay, let's hear it.
Did you find anything with dahlias and cochineal?
No.
I did know about cochineal. I don't know how that's how you pronounce it, but I learned about it a couple years ago. So the Spanish, you know, they were entrenched in Mexico, and they had a monopoly on this particular dye that was only found in Mexico. And it comes from the dried female insects called carmine grana. And they...
Wait, I did read about this.
So they use these female dried insects to make this really intense red dye known as cochineal. And at the time that the Spanish government had this monopoly over the red dye, French tapestry and fabrics were really well known over all of Europe. And that was like the standard. So they, there was like this really high demand for this red dye to enhance their fabric. But the Spanish wouldn't like give up the secret, like where they were getting it from or how to make it. So the French got tired of relying on the Spanish to supply them with this red dye. And also the Spanish were jacking up the prices, because why not, of course.
Because they had a monopoly.
Right. So the French minister to Mexico decided to smuggle a few of those insects to France. But in the shipment of insects, there was accidentally a large batch of Dahlia tubers with the insects. And when the shipment arrived in France, the insects had died, but the Dahlia tubers had survived. So as it turns out, the French minister, he had bribed a bunch of Mexicans to get these the insects. But the Mexicans who he bribed to smuggle the insects used Dahlia tubers intentionally, because without the juicy cactus-like leaves to chew on, the insects would die. So he's like, well, shit, this is a failure. I don't have the insects that I need. So he's like, I don't know what to do with them. So he kind of turned it around, and he offered the Dahlia tubers to Empress Josephine, who, if you don't know, that was Napoleon Bonaparte's first wife. And she was an avid gardener. She had a lifelong love of gardening and flowers, and had a lot of knowledge about gardening. And under her expertise, the Dahlia tubers thrived, and they bloomed, and they were beautiful, and they became the envy of all of the court in France and all over Europe, because no one else in Europe had them. And as you know, they're so beautiful. So people kept asking her for them, and she was like, no, hell no, these are mine, like, get the hell away. And she guarded them. And so this is how Dahlias got out to the rest of Europe. A Polish count was visiting her home, and he bribed a lady in waiting and one of the gardeners to dig up over 100 of her Dahlia plants, and took them back with him to Poland to propagate. And when this is like so scandalous, like, oh my God. And Empress Josephine was so angry at the loss of her dahlias and her exclusivity that she ordered all the remainder of her Dahlia tubers to be dug up and destroyed, because she was so pissed.
Damn. She's all, everyone else has them, I don't want them.
She's like, bitch, stole my dahlias.
Gosh, that's crazy.
Yeah, so she...
like, that is really being overdramatic.
Like, I don't know how much of that is true. I've also heard other, like, theories that have to do with Queen Antoinette. But a popular one is with Empress Josephine, and I kind of liked that one.
Yeah, no, I like it, but, like, damn.
Yeah, it was intense. So she's, one of her nicknames is the Queen of the Dahlia, so.
Ah, okay. So I found a different way of how Europe got introduced or got dahlias.
Okay.
So I found that the first species of dahlia to be introduced to Europe were pinnata, rosea, and coccinea. And dahlia, what I found, came to Europe when the director of the botanical garden in Mexico City sent dahlia seeds to Abe Antonio Jose Cavanilles. Such a long name. At the Royal Gardens of Madrid in 1789, and it was Cavanilles who attributed the name Dahlia to the flower after a Swedish botanist, Anders Dahl.
Oh, I found that, yeah.
Yeah, so that's like, I mean, not as fun as your...
I know, I don't know if mine's true, but it's really fun.
It's fun, yeah.
Yeah, I found that dahlias were a staple of Victorian gardens, and for a really long time, only courts were allowed to have dahlias. Like, commoners were not permitted to grow dahlias, and if you were found with dahlias in your garden, they would be destroyed. because it was like a symbol of royalty, really. But by the 1900s, Dahlia societies had started forming all over England.
Oh my God. I found the whole society thing too. There's like Dahlia societies all over the place.
There's still Dahlia societies, and they have entire papers on the history of the Dahlia and the biggest Dahlia in the world and all this other stuff. And they hold Dahlia, they still do this. They hold Dahlia competitions to see who can grow the biggest and most beautiful Dahlia.
So cool. I need to go to this.
Yeah, I want to see a massive ass Dahlia. We should look up who, like, some of the winners.
Yeah, let's look up when, like, they have their competition, and or because I'm sure it's like a festival of some sort, like a Dahlia festival, and I'd be so down to go to that.
Yeah, because I know they have them, they have these societies in the U.S., but they're really big in Europe.
Yeah, I know that they do have some in the U.S., like Seattle and like Oregon area, I know has some, but yeah.
Can I switch topics for a second?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. This is the first time I've come across this. Do you know that there is a subsect of white magic called flower magic?
I feel like I've like heard it, but I don't really know anything about it.
So
I've heard someone like mention it before, but I don't know anything about it.
So this came when I was doing like a deep dive into, you know, Tumblr, which is like, you know, has everything and it has a lot of fun stuff. I know, like, wow. The Dahlia comes up a lot in flower magic. So I'm like, what the hell is flower magic? So I had to look this up. So it's a form of white magic that allows the practitioners to cast spells through flowers and or magically manipulate flowers to create various effects. So like it comes back to us always talking about how magic is all about intention. It's just using flowers to manifest these intentions.
Your intention, right.
And I guess
it's a tool to the magic.
Right. So in flower magic, Dahlia symbolizes dignity. So it's used. Yes. Which I loved. It's used a lot in spells when someone's lacking dignity and they need it restored. I found a lot of times this is used for elderly people that feel like they're losing their dignity, like they aren't seen as human.
I found that too, and I found that like you should like send like dahlias to elderly people, like it's a symbol of like dignity.
Yeah,
specifically, I believe it was red dahlias.
Yeah, so I thought that was really cool. Flower magic. I'm going to have to, like, look up flower magic for all the flowers we do.
Yeah, so I found that, too. So I found that magically dahlias represent, like Hannah said, dignity, but also inner strength.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this lady who had a bunch of different spells for different plants and whatnot. And she had one for restoring dignity, and it like used the Dahlia as a tool, you know, in this spell for the magic to enhance it. So she says to first find a Dahlia flower that strikes you as regal, as like strong, as royal, you know. And now take the flower and hold it in both of your hands and confide in the flower. Tell the flower what has caused you to lose your dignity, what has you down. And really tell her. It doesn't have to be one event, she says. She says it can be anything. Like, just confide to her. Really let it out. And then look at the Dahlia and say, I accept your virtue as my own. My bad reputation to the west is blown. Now, remove the petals and face the west and blow the petals out of your hand and do a one of these a...
We can't see you.
I know, but do one of these. Noise? Yeah, you know the noise. The,
yes.
Like, the
your hands the... Get rid of that shit.
Yeah, get rid of that shit. But three wipes. So, and then turn around and walk away, leaving whatever took your dignity in the past.
I like that. I like
and
that a
don't
lot.
Don't look back. Just walk away from it.
Don't look back. And just leave that
don't
shit.
Don't think about it. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I thought that was great. I was like, oh, woo. That's good.
Yeah, I could get into some flower magic. I like this positivity.
Right? I like that too. And I like bringing the flower into it because it really like helps you kind of see the intention, I think, a little bit better.
I think so too. And especially because flowers, especially the Dahlia, is just so bright and so big and full.
So beautiful.
It's great.
It's so and it stands so tall and proud.
Mm-hmm.
It really does.
I need to plant some.
Oh, I love it. You should. And they flower a long time. So, like, mine's been flowering for, like, 2 months, and I just keep flipping it, and it just keeps flowering and flowering. And it's a flower that, from what I was reading, will stay blooming longer than other flowers in the garden. However, I don't know how long it'll stay blooming in Phoenix, so I'll have to see.
Yeah.
It's going really strong right now. But once it gets, like, it's looking, you know, like it's having a hard time, I'm going to dig up the tubers and preserve them for next year and then replant them, so... Yeah.
Unlike some of the other plants that we've talked about, I found that new studies are being performed to determine the medicinal effects of dahlia, which is really cool.
I had a hard time finding medicinal things about dahlia, except for when it came to diabetes. I don't know if you found
that. Yeah, I found a lot on diabetes. I found that they did a new study. I don't know who they is. There was like this big article. I think it was in maybe the New York Times. Like it was a pretty prominent, well-read paper.
Journal or paper.
Whatever. And the findings said that the petals of dahlias contain three molecules that when they grow together can help people with pre-diabetes or diabetes control their blood sugar levels. And these same three molecules, when they're together, they also reduce brain inflammation.
Nature and her synergy, you know?
Yeah, I guess these three molecules like have to be together.
She knows exactly what to put together. Yeah, so I found that before insulin was discovered to be like given to diabetics, you know? Mm-hmm. The starch from the tubers was actually given to diabetics in both Europe and the Americas, because it has inulin in it. And so this starchy extract from the tuber, was often referred to Atlantic starch or diabetic sugar. And that was used before insulin.
Yeah, so. that's, I found similar findings, and also that same inulin, it promotes cardiovascular support and immune system support. So in that sense, it was a really important piece of the Native American and Aztec diet.
I know, it really makes you want to actually go try the dahlia tuber.
I'm curious, but I'm not digging up something that pretty just to take a bite of the root.
I know, that's the hard part. I'm like, it's so beautiful. So that's why you wait till it's done flowering. Next year I'll try. I just want to go to the different colors of dahlias.
Yes.
So the different colors of dahlias, like I said earlier, have different symbolic meanings. So I'm just going to kind of go through the different colors here. So red dahlias represent inner strength and perseverance to overcome difficulties, which I find is lovely, which makes sense because dahlias already, like we've said, are just, they stand so proud, so tall. But you put the red dahlia, it's just like, it really is so, it's just such a strong presence, you know? So, and then the pink dahlias I found represent feminine beauty, grace, and kindness.
Yeah, I found that for that reason, it's a good Mother's Day gift because it's feminine and elegant.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is coming up, so buy you some pink dahlias.
It is coming up. By the way, I'm taking that weekend off, so. anyways, purple dahlias represent royalty, respect, admiration, and enchantment.
Bitch, get it.
So if someone gives you some purple dahlias, they find you just...
They're enchanted with you.
you're on a pedestal to them if someone gives you some purple dahlias. So if anyone wants to send me purple dahlias, no, I'm kidding. kind of. Anyways, yellow dahlias represent joy, which makes total sense. The yellow dahlias in my front yard, I mean, they really, you really can't look at them and be angry. Like, they are just so bright and cheery and, very joyful.
Yeah, I found that for yellow dahlias, you're supposed to give them during, like, special life milestones, like graduations or friendship anniversary.
Okay, cute.
Yeah.
Which I think in roses, yellow is friendship, isn't it?
It is now, but didn't it during the Victorian age, it symbolized like jealousy or like you were being cheated on or something?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
But okay, not for dahlias. Dahlias, it's joy. Orange dahlias represent creativity, which makes sense. I feel like orange oftentimes refers to creativity.
Yeah.
And then white dahlias, of course, represent innocence, purity, new birth, new beginnings, all the news, all the innocence. Yeah. And then black dahlias, which we already went over, are the sadness and betrayal. Yeah. So, yeah, I know. No.
Well, I really want, if you guys have tried dahlia tubers, can you let us know? Because I'm reading all these different descriptions. Like, I find that some of them are bitter, and people are like, it's a mixture of celery, artichoke, and jicama, which that seems like a lot of different things.
But I kind of get it, though.
And then some people said they're similar to radish, which radish has a really strong taste.
So I read that some people said that they can be pretty spicy depending on the variety. So
yeah, that makes sense because radish are hot.
Spicy. Yeah, exactly. Which would also make sense because Hernandez said how it was a hot, dry plant. So
probably the spicy ones are closer to like the original flower.
The original. Yeah, that's what I read, is that the spicier, the closer they are to the original. And I think I read, and don't quote me on this, don't get me wrong, but I think I read that, like, the original dahlia is, like, we don't have it anymore. Because
probably it's not
hybridized so much.
Even the Aztecs were hybridizing it, and that was forever ago. Yeah.
Exactly. So, anyways, that's all I had on dahlia this week. I don't know if you have anything else on dahlia.
No, just that the most prominent nickname for it is King of the Summer Garden, which, like we said, it's very regal, so that makes sense, and it's tall, so I loved that.
It totally gives me, see, I found that too, the King of the Summer Garden, and it honestly, like, it doesn't give me masculine vibes, though.
It does to me.
It does?
Yeah.
To me, it feels a little bit more feminine, maybe because the
it's abrasive. It's like gaudy. It's abrasive. It's in your face with its beauty. I mean, I love it, but that seems masculine to me.
And it has tubers, which are like balls.
Is that a professional herbalist opinion? Would you like some tubers? They're great for managing your blood sugar level, and they look like balls. It's been a long Monday.
I know, just in the...
Oh my god.
I might have to cut that out.
Nah.
but okay, I guess yeah, they stand very tall, very proud. And,
they're in your face. Masculine. Yeah.
They are in your face. You can't not help but notice them in the garden.
Yeah. They're the jock of the garden, for sure.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, so that's all we've got for you guys on the royal beautiful dahlia.
That was fun. That was a different one. It had a different, interesting history.
It was really fun, and I just kept looking at these beautiful dahlias in my front yard, and I was like, God, I like, want to know.
I had no idea you could eat them. Or that they have medicinal properties.
Yeah, and I had absolutely no idea they were native to Mexico. I truly, for some reason, thought they were going to come from Europe. I don't know. But yeah, from Mexico. And I just want to let you guys know as well, we now have our website up and running. So it is houseofhoneyandherbs.com. I will link it in the show notes for you guys.
And Nat designed this herself. She did everything herself. It was very impressive. I could never do that.
Yeah. It took me a really long time. I think it turned out nice.
It's awesome.
Yeah. There's an about the podcast section on there. There's a podcast section on there. So there's a page for every episode that you can go on and take a look at there. I also have some companion planting guides that I have made for home gardeners. It's herbs, flowers, and vegetables, and what you should plant together and what you should avoid planting together.
Which I didn't even know this was a thing until she showed me this, and now I see it all over Instagram. Like, the latest trend, and you need to tell me if this is correct, is planting onions with strawberries. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, I don't want my strawberries to taste like onions. But companion planting, I had no idea that was a thing.
Yeah, I think that makes sense because onions are really good at keeping pests away from, keeping
the pests like the strawberries because they're sugary.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. But anyways, yeah, so I made some companion planting guides, and they are available on the website as a digital download for $15 or a print for $30. They're about 25 pages long, very easy to read, and it's set up
really just handy easy. Tips you would never know.
Yeah. And then also I will have some candles up on there soon. They're going to be Desert Rain candles, so they are
you're gonna do the creosote one? I love that one.
Yeah. So they are like the made desert. From wildcrafted creosote that I collect myself out in the desert. And then I essentially use a hydrosol of that with the beeswax from our dad's farm. And I make a candle, a beeswax candle out of that. And it smells like rain. It's so yummy.
Yeah.
So those will be available on the website as well.
Down here on the southern border, whenever it's about to rain, you can smell the creosote. They like put off a scent, so you know it's about to rain. So every time I smell that, I'm like, oh, it smells like the desert in summertime. So I love it.
And then last but not least, there is also a submit a story page under the podcast section of the website. And this is there for you guys to write in any stories you might have regarding any herbs. And if you write them in and we get a fun story, maybe we'll share.
Let's read it. Let's read it to everyone.
Yeah. So if you want to submit a story about a plant, if it's like an experience you had with a plant, or maybe a tradition your family has that involves a plant, or whatever it may be, please submit that for us there. We would love to hear your stories. And if you are looking to work with a clinical herbalist, I am now taking clients as well, and those will be over Zoom. So lots of information there for you guys at the end, but
we grow
thought in. I would share. Yeah, we grow in, we get in things going. So anyways, have a beautiful week, and we will see you back here next time for another episode of the Plantology Podcast. And please remember to rate the show.